This is the Angry GM, and Happy New Year! For this is, finally, the first live proofread aloud of the new year. I promised I would do it, and I did eventually get around to doing it, and here I am doing it. So today I will be proofreading aloud the first article of the new year, a nice, fun, rambling bullshit article none of you are going to like. I do have a live studio audience here in the Angry Games studios who will be listening live on the Discords, and then when I am done, will have the opportunity to ask questions and make comments for my answering and comment readering, which will be posted as a supplemental Q&A to the main to the proofread aloud, a supplement to the proofread aloud, as is standard. So there will be a time when I shut it off and change over, and Procellus is providing production, so I will be produced, which will keep me from going over time. But all of that aside, let me just begin reading, and I have beverage on hand and kitty nearby. So today, here we go. Proofreading aloud, the article entitled GNSP, and there's a question mark in there, and ellipses, so GNSP. Happy New Year, all y'all. Those of you who've been following me for years know that I like to end, or start, or both, my year with reflective, pontificative, navel-gazing bullshit. Mainly so I can stop doing real work before the holidays and not start again for a few weeks into the year. For today's rambling bullshit, though, I want to channel my inner, angry old man yelling at clouds to get off his lawn, which I never do, and reflect on a change in the role-playing gameplay culture I've been watching develop for a few years now. One I don't personally like, but unlike many of my other old man rants, this one ain't unique to me. I know for a fact that it's leaving lots of game masters and many players increasingly dissatisfied with their role-playing gaming experience, especially certain specific role-playing gaming experiences. I'm actually realizing that there is a massive problem, that this introduction was written and the article that I am introducing is not quite this article. And it's a long introduction. I might just have to go with it. And I mean, I do at the end explain why there is a I'm going to have to follow up with this in February. So that should be good enough. I have a follow-up coming. So anyway. Okay. Yeah. What can you do? All right. For today's rambling bullshit, though, I want to channel my inner... Because the thing is, I never get around to being an angry old man yelling at clouds to get off his lawn and complaining about the problem. That the complaints will come later. Because it was enough to... Like, defining the problem took so... Okay, I'm not proofreading aloud anymore. Now I'm just commenting on... Well, okay, you all know this, and you all will understand why it works out that way, and everybody else who reads the article, I guess they can just post in the comments that I never got around to this, even though I say at the end. But I'm not doing any of that today, so it's a bait and switch. This is a bait and switch. All right, so don't be fooled. Anyway... For today's rambling bullshit, though, I want to channel my inner angry old man yelling at clouds to get off his lawn, which I never do, and reflect on a change in the role-playing gameplay culture I've been watching develop for a few years now. One I don't personally like. But unlike many of my other old man rants, this one ain't unique to me. I know for a fact that it's leaving lots of game masters... and many players, increasingly dissatisfied with their role-playing gaming experience, especially certain specific role-playing gaming experiences. Yes, I think this shift is the reason why a certain greatest role-playing game in the entire world is struggling to fill its GMing rosters, and why lots of independent content creators who used to exclusively publish crap for that certain system are now publishing videos with titles like 5 tabletop role-playing games you should be playing that aren't that one game. Now, I realize it's the 1-year anniversary of WotC's giant fuck all y'all content creators, and then they're saying, gotcha, it was just a joke, that's what we do here, we joke, don't we have fun? And yes, that's probably a part of why many content creators have jumped ship over the last 11 months. But I, personally, think that only sped up a trend that was already happening. By January of last year, D&D had already been bleeding off GMs and content creators for some time. But this ain't an academic paper, and I don't care about proving that I'm speaking for anyone but myself. So I ain't gonna try and justify all that, and I'm not the only one who thinks so, crap. I don't care if you believe me or agree with me, and I never have. Smart, clever gaming geniuses agree with me. If you want to be one of those other people, that's your choice and your problem. I don't care. I want to look at the shift itself, the emerging playstyle, and propose that it is probably here to stay. We're just going to have to add another letter to that bullshit GNS acronym. For better or for worse. I ain't saying we have to accept it or embrace it or facilitate it, because I sure as shit don't plan to, but we do have to know it's out there and individually and collectively decide what to do with it. Okay, I did moderate the approach. Okay, so I am not promising a rant at this point. I'm just saying, well, let's talk about what's there. I'm not going to fight and yell and justify. Okay, good, good. The introduction still fits. Everything is safe. Nothing is ruined. Okay, I want to look at the shift itself, the emerging playstyle, and propose that it is probably here to stay. We're just going to have to add another letter to that bullshit GNS acronym, for better or for worse. I ain't saying we have to accept it or embrace it or facilitate it, because I sure as shit don't plan to, but we do have to know it's out there and individually and collectively decide what to do with it. More importantly, though, I want to clarify and formalize some shit I've been saying for a while, and draw some actual conclusions from them. See, this pile of bullshit started with a desire to put an end to some emails and arguments. Over the past while, I've coined and refined and repeatedly used 2 disdainful terms for the way certain people approach D&D. And based on questions and comments I keep receiving, lots of you still don't understand those terms. It's just that in planning and outlining and clarifying that article, yes, I do plan and outline even these rambling piles of bullshit. In planning and outlining that article, well, I plan and outline a lot of them. In planning, I plan some of them. When I tried to write that damned article, I realized those two terms are inextricably connected to each other and to a certain approach to D&D play that seems to be coming up a lot in everything from public convention and store games to online streamed games, and one that underpins a lot of published gaming advice and even published products. It's an approach that WotC has been subtly supporting and encouraging and even emphasizing in their latest products and playtest releases, and it's an approach that's different enough, if very subtly, from the other common approaches to playing D&D to warrant being called a unique style of play. And that brings me to my first actual heading. Act 1, Talking Playstyle. Playstyle is a hard thing to nail down. First, because it's one of those words lots of people use without really knowing what it actually means, and second, because it's something people are really stupid about. For example, lots of dumbasses struggle to grasp the difference between being definitive and being descriptive, and that certain things, like subjective play experiences and approaches, can only be described in vague, nebulous terms of trends and patterns of behavior across broad swaths of a given audience. Lots of dumbasses also struggle with the difference between a game's mechanical rules and how an actual game is played. They insist that the rulebooks define how the game is played, and that therefore the question of playstyle is damaged. Okay, hold on a second. Biscuit just threw her motion-sensitive robot toy at me. Shoot. One moment, please. All right, I am back. Biscuit has been removed from the room, and her toys have been. And where the hell was I? Okay, lots of dumbasses also struggle with the difference between a game's mechanical rules and how a game is actually played. I need to move words around. This is the first time I'm stopping because I actually have to correct something instead of because I'm panicking because I wrote the article badly or discovering I didn't, or Biscuit. Okay. Lots of dumbasses also struggle with the difference between a game's mechanical rules and how a game actually is played. How a game is actually played. You people like these things, huh? Lots of dumbasses also struggle with the difference between a game's mechanical rules and how a game is actually played. They insist that the rule books define how the game is played, and that therefore the question of playstyle is really a question of playing the right way as the designers intended and playing wrong. Then some dumbasses mistake personal preferences for value judgments or objective statements of design quality. They believe that what they like is good, or good design, and what they dislike is bad design, or broken design, to such a degree that they can't even see that's what they're doing. They also can't tolerate any objective discussion of the negative qualities of shit they like or the positive qualities of shit they hate. But some dumbass... And some dumbasses forget how much psychology underpins... Oh no, it is a but. But some dumbasses forget how much psychology underpins gameplay such that it is possible to analyze games objectively from a standpoint of social or psychological strengths and weaknesses, or even to analyze games in terms of whether they're healthy or unhealthy pursuits. And there's a subset of those dumbasses who don't understand that shit can feel good but still be bad for you. And, of course, other dumbasses don't understand that people analyze costs and benefits differently, so they can't fathom why someone would accept the costs of engaging in unhealthy but good-feeling behavior, and that that might actually be okay, provided it is a conscious choice and not willful ignorance. The point is, when I'm talking about all this playstyle stuff, I'm waving my hand vaguely in some direction and saying, see those people over there? See how they all seem to be playing D&D a certain way? And see how that's different from how all those other people are playing D&D? See how there are patterns of behavior? Let's call that a play style, and then look at how it might impact the psychology of gameplay, game design, and the consequences thereof. I might even add something like, and I think those consequences are more negative than positive, and I therefore wish the game designers would take a more active hand in encouraging alternative styles of play. Do you think we can handle that shit like mature adults? Well, I don't care, I'm forging on anyway. How to play D&D. But what the hell actually is playstyle? What does it mean to discuss how people engage with D&D? Because obviously there's more to it than just how to play D&D. After all, it's pretty easy to explain how D&D is played. If you're a sexy gaming genius like me, anyway. I've done it tons of times. Sing along. You create a character that represents you in a fantasy world of adventure. Your game master will describe the situation your character finds itself in. You'll then decide what your character says and does. The game master will determine and describe the result of those words and deeds using a bunch of rules and dice as necessary. And round it goes. That's how you play D&D. At least that's what you actually do at the table. But how do you decide what your character does? How do you decide what character to make? How do you decide what goals to pursue? What strategies to employ? It doesn't matter how you personally answer those questions. It's those questions, or rather that one question, how do you decide what to do, wherein playstyle lives. And while you might be one of those dumbasses who knows absolutely that there is a definitive right way to make those choices, and it's really obvious from the rule books, the actual correct truth of the matter that you're incapable of comprehending as a dumbass is that it's a very open question, especially when it comes to tabletop role-playing gaming. If we were talking, say, Magic the Gathering or Terraforming Catan or whatever, it'd be a different story. Those games have very firm goals and very limited interactions. While play strategies vary from game to game and player to player, most players know the game's about making the choices that maximize the odds of victory. No one playing Terraforming Catan is thinking, as the CEO of Globex Corp, maybe I'd cut costs and line my own pockets even if it meant the Terraforming project would fail. Hell, some people do stupid bullshit like that. Look at all the Magic the Gathering players who add crappy cards or discard good cards because they're building some lame-ass theme deck. They don't care if they maximize their odds of success as long as all their cards fit with the Steppenwolf theme they're building. Tabletop role-playing games are so open-ended and unconstrained that the idea of playing to maximize the odds of victory is impossible just because there are so many possibilities and incomparables and unforeseeable consequences, just as in real life. Moreover, the use of the word role-playing suggests strongly that players should, to some degree, consider their character's nature or personality or background when making choices. And that's the space where how do you play D&D becomes a super complicated question. Pat answers are easy enough. I can say, just make the choice you think your character would make, and I do. I think that's a solid and easily grokkable summary of what role-playing actually is. But even that leaves a lot of room for thought and interpretation and argument. And no one actually does just that. Consider, for example, the classic issue of whether a person's playing right when they choose a character action that sabotages the party's chances of success because they honestly believe that's the action their character would take. If you can get past the dumbass value judgments and stop fighting over personal preferences as if they're objective facts, you've got to admit that's a pretty complicated question, and it's hard to answer, especially when you then add in the psychology of cooperative social play. It's also important to remember that most people don't think about this shit consciously. They just play the game. Most game masters don't either. They just run the game. And most designers just build the mechanics they think will lead to a fun game. And that's how it's gotta be anyway. Most players are terrible at understanding why they do what they do. And game masters have no idea what their players are thinking and how their players are making choices. And the word thinking is missing there. And most game masters have no idea, or end game masters, not most, end game masters, period, and no game masters. Right. End game masters have no idea what their players are thinking and how their players are making choices. They only see the behaviors. They're guessing at the motives. And everyone, especially you, are so bogged down with biases that you can't think objectively about this without serious effort, training, and the shattering of deeply held beliefs, which is something most folks, especially you, just can't handle. As if that ain't bad enough, There's also the question of how people even learn how to play D&D. How you learned D&D. You didn't learn D&D from the rulebooks. No one does. And that's not because most of you don't even read the effing rules, and it's not because the rules are badly written and don't teach you how to play. It's because humans don't learn how to do things by reading about them. Humans learn to do by watching other humans do and by doing themselves. You might have learned enough to start playing D&D from a book, but your actual gameplay approach, how you decide what to do, emerged from your gameplay experiences and your exposure to others playing the game. It's an intuitive, experiential process, one you don't even consciously know happened. And the end result is a complicated, subjective, personal approach to D&D, one that's unique to you, but is nonetheless a product of your interactions with everyone you've played with and every bit of gaming media you've consumed. And while your playstyle is personal and unique, it's also similar enough to lots of other people's styles that it can be usefully described and analyzed. Or rather, the gameplay behaviors that result from your approach, the things you do at the table as a result of your playstyle, can be described and analyzed. There are lots of such descriptions floating around the game sphere. You've heard terms like min-maxer and power gamer and munchkin and thespian and murder hobo and gnomish bard and asshole and metagamer and wallflower, right? Well, those are playstyles. Don't be a dumbass. Don't forget that those terms describe people's behaviors, not their motivations. You can never know what's in someone's head. And don't attach value judgments to this shit. Of course, there are more academic, pseudo-academic, and designer-oriented terms, too. Take the classic gamist, simulationist, narrativist trinity that I've railed against before. And note that I've only railed against it because it's presented as definitive and exclusive. Every gamer is either a gamist or a simulationist or a narrativist, and those words are always spelled with capital letters. If the GNS morons were less rigid and categorical about the whole damn thing, I'd be more comfortable flinging those terms around. And do not confuse any of this with my game design approach darling, MDA, a formal approach to game design and game research, or Quantic Foundry's gamer motivation model. That shit ain't about play style, but rather about play aesthetics. That shit is about why players play the games they do, not how they play them. Play style is about the dynamics of play, not the aesthetics of play. But that's a subtle point I'll be explaining another time after enough of you ask enough questions about it. Honestly, the easiest way to really grasp this playstyle thing is to just ask people, how do you play D&D? And then listen real close to the answer. People will generally reveal their own playstyle in the answer. Some will say, it's a game of fantasy adventure. You create a hero and go on quests and get treasure. Others will say, it's about telling a fantasy story with a group of friends. Others will say, it's an escapist fantasy about pretending you're a character in a fantasy world. My point is, though, that whatever term fits you and however you describe what D&D is about, that's the result of your play experiences and the gaming media you've consumed. That's how it is. The designers didn't do that. They can't. But that, and literally every word I've typed so far in this article, is just background. It's context. It's me telling you how to think about this playstyle crap in general. Mainly so you aren't blindsided in Act 3 of this article with me talking about playstyle. Meanwhile, Act 2, which has nothing to do with playstyle. Act 2, create and portray through push-button play. For the last few years, I've been eviscerating certain increasingly common player behaviors and design approaches with such frequency that I've had to invent new insults for them. For instance, a few years ago, I started pissing and whining about this thing called push-button play. And in the last 18 months, give or take, I started swearing about something called create and portray play. I did explain those phrases several times, and my explanations got deeper and bigger and more complicated each time. And with every explanation, I lost a few more of you. I know because some of you have started using my terms and you keep using them wrong. And others of you keep asking me to explain them. The whole point of this article, which I'm getting to 2,500 words in, as is par for my course, the point of this article is, in essence, just to clarify those two terms. But I suspect those clarifications will be way quicker and easier because of the 2,500 words of context I piled on top of them. Which is good, because I have some more rambling bullshit about playstyle to follow the clarifications. Push-button play. A long time ago, I described this certain style of play in which players respond to every in-game situation by scanning their character sheet for a specific skill or ability to use on that situation. The players then expect the GM to ask for a single rolled check that, if successful, resolves the situation. The clearest example of push-button play is this sentence. Can I roll persuasion to convince the guard to let me go? Why'd I call this push-button play? Because I likened it to treating skills and abilities like buttons to press on a controller. Or rather, because it's like players clicking on skills and items and then clicking on in-game obstacles and expecting the obstacles to just go away as if they were playing one of those point-and-click adventure games. The problem is, that's actually just how you play D&D, or any role-playing game. Apart from the problem of players using skill names to declare their actions, push-button play is really just players declaring actions and then rolling checks to overcome obstacles. At my own table, the rogue player will sometimes say, I try to pick the lock, and I will say, roll a lock-picking skill check, and they will say, I rolled a 17, and I will say, huzzah forsooth, for the lock is opened by your skillful skill use. How is that not push-button play? Well, it is, but it's the okay kind, because this shit's more complicated than it seems. Push-button play is about how much goes into declaring an action. How high a hurdle must a player clear before I allow them to roll a die to overcome something or make some progress? If the player needs to say no more than, I would like to convince the guard to set me free to get a charm check, that's push-button play. If the player instead must decide what to say and how to say it before they get to touch the dice, it's not push-button play. But push-button play isn't about action resolutions. It's about patterns and expectations. There will always be actions as simple as, I pick the lock or I plead with the guard. That's the nature of things. The issue is how often there's more than that. Do the players ever face challenges that require them to make more than one simple declarative sentence that's synonymous with a character skill or ability? How often does that happen? And how do the players respond when it does? Does it surprise them? Do the players object? Do the players say things like, why do I have to tell you where I'm searching? I have the search skill. My character knows where to search. When players think their job is to pick the right skill or ability for the problem and roll a die to fix it, that's push-button play. When the players think their job is to describe their character's approach to a problem and then roll whatever dice are required or not required based on their character's skills and abilities, that's not push-button play. And that's true even when describing an approach is as simple as saying, I beg and plead, and the resolution is as simple as rolling a 16 or better with your charisma die. And given that long-ass speech about playstyle, it's way easier to grasp this shit, isn't it? Let's do another. Create and portray play. I coined the term create and portray play to players, I coined the term create and portray play to describe players creating fully realized and detailed characters at the start of the game and then striving to stay true to that character vision in their role-playing throughout the game. And once again, it seems like I'm just describing role-playing, doesn't it? That's what role-playing means. I think that whole prelude, or playstyle prelude to this discussion will help you see what I'm getting at, though. Because again, this is about patterns and expectations and approaches. Create and portray players create characters with clearly defined motivations, personalities, beliefs, goals, and fears right from the get-go. Their character's character doesn't emerge from gameplay, and it doesn't change as the game plays out. The character is fixed from the start, at least in role-playing terms. What's the alternative? It's a character that takes time to emerge. Over the first several sessions, the character's personality and quirks appear at the table, or they disappear, or they change. The character is shaped through play, meaning specifically that the character's character is molded by the character's interactions with other characters and the world, and also by the player's interactions with the other players at the table. So a player might notice they've been playing their character a certain way over the last few sessions and may then decide that that represents a particular personality quirk. It wasn't planned or intended, it just happened, and the player is choosing to run with it. Likewise, a player might notice something they planned just isn't working. Maybe a quirk of personality just isn't coming up, or it's leading to strife. Or maybe an intended social dynamic isn't happening. Say, for example, the player wanted their character to take a leadership role. That's their vision for the character. But in play, the party isn't allowing itself to be led, and the character thus isn't falling into that role. The player might discard that vision for their character's role and even adjust the character's personality as a result. It's down to approaches and expectations, right? Create and portray players believe that they're supposed to define a fully realized character and then bring that character to life through play. That's just how you roleplay. It's how you play D&D. The opposite is the player who believes their goal is to find their character gradually through play and allow that character to evolve as the game plays out. I hope that shit makes sense because I can't think of another way to explain it. With the context of playstyle, though, it should be enough. It better be, because it's time for Act 3. Act 3. Putting the P in GNS. Let me try to tie this shit up with a neat little bow. I'm probably going to confuse the issue somewhat and end up with 10,000 new questions and complaints, but that's okay. I know I'm going to have to revisit this topic, probably next month, because I recognize I need some space now to think through what all this crap means. Do keep in mind that this article started with me just explaining two dumb terms I coined and evolved into what you're reading now, dynamically, through play. I mean writing. What I propose is that push-button play and create and portray play are behaviors, not styles, but that they tend to emerge from players who have internalized a certain play style, a new play style, one no one's really defined yet. And while that play style has probably always existed on the fringes of tabletop role-playing gaming, it's become much more commonplace in the last several years. Perhaps it's even become the predominant style of play, at least in certain systems. And that's due to a combination of cultural shifts and a new audience discovering the tabletop role-playing game space. But I'm gonna hold off on discussing the causes and implications of all this shit. Partly because, as I said, I need to let it all marinate in my brain juices, but also because I need to filter my own biases out of this mess. This demands some cold, objective analysis, and I can't provide it yet because, frankly, the playstyle I'm proposing is one I viscerally hate. Players of this style are players I don't want to share tables with. And there are actually precious few styles of play I'd actually say that about. I propose that to the G, the N, and the S, we add a P. So I'm just correcting. There's some missing commas here. Just boop, 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 comma, comma, comma. Comma, comma, chameleon. Okay. I propose that to the G, the N, and the S, we add a P. Some players see D&D as a game. They think it's about overcoming obstacles, winning adventures, accomplishing goals, and advancing characters. Some players see D&D as a narrative. They think it's about telling a story of fantasy adventure, and they want to share the most interesting story possible. Some players see D&D as a simulation. They think it's about entering a world as a character and dealing with it as it is. Whatever happens, happens. And now, some players see D&D as a performance. They think it's about putting on a show. They have a role to play, and they've got to play it to the hilt in the most interesting and engaging way possible. It's obvious how that leads to create and portray play. The challenge of the game comes from staying as true to your character vision as possible and demonstrating that character to the rest of the table. Hence, it doesn't matter whether a created and portrayed character is less dynamic and interactive than other characters. Hence why such players can't start with a blank slate and why some even struggle with a random character. They need to be comfortable wearing the character like a skin. But how does push-button play emerge from a performance mindset? It's like this. The performance player doesn't see the game as about overcoming obstacles and facing challenges. Really, it doesn't matter whether the characters overcome obstacles or not. Either way, there's a role to play. Thus, die rolls aren't about success and failure. They're not about the outcome. Instead, they're performance prompts. They tell you, the performance player, how to portray the action in question. Hence why such players prefer to describe their own actions, and why such players consider being able to describe their own crits and kill shots however they want to be a reward. And hence also why such players often play their results more dramatically when the die shows a very high or a very low number, because the die itself is part of the performance prompt. When you see performance as a playstyle, and as one that's different even from narrative play, a whole lot of player behaviors suddenly make sense, especially behaviors exhibited by gamers who entered the hobby through D&D and in the last decade or so. Because while there have always been performance players, there's been a big influx of them lately. In the past, performance play was probably seen as a subset of either narrative or simulation play, depending on how it emerged at the table, because it wasn't that common. But now it is, and so it's obvious those players are thinking about the game differently on some fundamental level. Today, I'm not saying whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Hell, I'm withholding any opinion beyond this ain't my personal jam right now. And I will say that I'm already recognizing that I've been too hard on certain behaviors because of my own biases. That said, I'm most likely going to be ripping this style a new asshole in the near future. And hopefully with that promise, you'll forgive me for just defining what I see right now as a new and currently popular tabletop role-playing gameplay style, and for having a more general discussion of what gameplay style means and how it's different from play aesthetics. Meanwhile, though, I can't stop any of you from lambasting or celebrating performance play, or telling me that I'm full of shit and it's not really a unique approach of its own that's even worth discussing. I just ask that you keep a couple of things in mind before you spew your opinions all over my comments section. First, note this shit has happened before. The playstyle you enjoy today, it was new once. D&D was basically 90% simulation until the Hickmans demonstrated what else it could be in 1983. And that was in response to a similar playstyle emergence in the community. And as simulation-y as D&D version 3 might have appeared, it was also the first edition that offered actual game design tools and structures that let GMs build more sophisticated gamist games. So if you don't see D&D as a let-the-dice-fall-where-they-may hexcrawl war game simulation, you're the end result of an emergent style of play that got big enough to warrant support. Second, you're biased. You've got a personal preference, and that preference is D&D the way you play it. Whatever you're feeling right now, whatever response wants to jump out of your fingers, it's emotional. It ain't objective and it ain't critical. You can cake it in objective terms, but that won't be intellectually honest. You're allowed to have your emotional responses and you're allowed to voice them. More power to you. Just see them for what they are and try to temper that shit a bit, okay? And because I myself am admitting my own biases, let me end by saying this. Fuck performance play. Seriously, it's shit. And save. All right. And that's it. That was the proofread aloud. So I will be back next week with another proofread aloud at some point. And then as a reminder, there are only two proofread alouds this month because two of the articles I'm releasing don't get proofread aloud. So I hope you all have a good weekend and a good week. Or I shouldn't say good weekend because I don't know when this will go up. But good week, good weekend, good whatever. I hope whatever is happening to you is good. That would be nice. Wouldn't it be nice? All right. Hasta lasagna.